Hello, hello, and welcome to The Thin Blue Mind. Each week we will be looking at current policing issues and topics within the UK. Our regular panel consists of Steve Bradshaw, who is a TV and theatre actor, Richard Horton, author, and me, Dave Thomas, broadcaster. What we all have in common is over 80 years of combined police service. Now retired, we will be providing opinion and insights from the unique position of having been there and done it. Steve spent the majority of his service on firearms before being promoted to inspector, where he was a force incident manager. Richard was a career detective before going back into uniform as a response sergeant. Myself, I spent the majority of my service on the Rhodes Policing Unit before going into CID and Child Protection. You may not agree with everything we say, but we will make you think. The Thin Blue Mind with Bradshaw, Horton and Thomas. Policing insights and opinion. Well, hello, hello, and welcome to this week's episode of The Thin Blue Mind. Now, this week we're going to be looking at the Metropolitan Police and the fact that it's being placed into special measures. It's a massive topic. I'm just going to bullet point the reasons why they've been put into special measures, and then we can perhaps talk more about not what they've done, but how they actually got there, I suppose. It's now called the Engage process by Her Majesty's Inspectorate. They've come under some criticism because they released a statement to say they were putting the Met in special measures, but then did not release their report into why. They've since admitted that that perhaps was a mistake on their part, and in future they'll be putting a statement and the report out together. They identified 14 failings. The areas of concern was the handling of emergency and non-emergency calls and the failure to realise vulnerability and repeat victims. The accuracy of crime recording was something left to be desired, 69,000 crimes unreported. Failing to update victims whose cases have been dropped, not considering or seeking victims' views. Poor supervision of some investigations, a persistent backlog of online child abuse referrals, insufficient understanding of force training requirements, management of assets, resources, and understanding of demand. Failure to record proper grounds on stop and search, which was a big topic we covered a few weeks ago. Up to 25% didn't have the proper grounds. And then there was the Daniel Morgan report into corruption and the serious failings within the Met. It also highlighted a young and inexperienced workforce. And then, of course, there's the scandals that it's recently suffered, the strip searching of a 15-year-old girl at school, Sarah Everard murder by Wayne Cousins, and inadequate investigation, I suppose, of a serial murder involving, I think, four gay men, and they didn't link the suspect to the individual incident. So that's why they're in special measures. I don't know, Rich, if you've been looking at it. What are special measures?
Special measures is when Her Majesty's Inspector Constabulary are not happy with you and decide in this stage to go into the Engage part of their process. That would be you're going to have more inspections, possibly rolling inspections. You're going to have some very intrusive questions being asked. And it happens if you were either not responding to a cause for concern that's been raised in an inspection, or you're seen as not succeeding in managing, mitigating, or eradicating the causes for concern. And it can be a mixture of the two. So let's say, for example, Majesty's Inspector has sent a whole list of things of causes for concern where they find the Met to be inadequate in their terms of what they do. Some of them, they don't get a response back. Some of them are sorted. Some of them are not sorted. You're going to find yourself in special measures under the Engage process as a result of failing to address the concerns. There's a further one, which I think I was reading through what they had to say about the Met and their causes for concern. They're also, the Met's going to be introducing new IT systems, and there is a cause for concern that there are risks around those new IT systems coming in that haven't been properly thought through. We know the Met are going to change into something similar to what we've had in Lancashire and elsewhere, a product that brought nothing but grief and glue into our processes in every part of the operation, except potentially control room. And even then, I'm not sure it was all that wonderful, but certainly for the front line, for custody, for CID, for anything that's involved in trying to get your files over to the CPS, it's been very problematic for us. And perhaps the Met are not as prepared as they might be, the amount of grief that's coming their way.
Are we talking about the magic word of Connect?
Yeah, the most ironically named piece of IT equipment in police history, I think, it's Connect.
Indeed, yeah, and perhaps we could talk a little bit about that later. I know the Met were quite disappointed with the HMIC because, from what I've read, they had plans in place, really, to address a lot of these things that the report or the statement has highlighted, but not being given the chance to implement them plans.
So the big question is, how did we get to this?
The big thing that jumps out at me from the long list that you've both read out is the failing crime areas, the failing victims of crime, and serious crime towards adults and young people. We've said it before in previous podcasts, actual bobbying, actual finding bad guys and arresting people for crime-related incidents are such a small and reducing level of business now for cops. They just don't have the time to do it. But that seems to be the main focus.
They underwent a massive reorganisation where they were amalgamating boroughs. That was one of their responses to austerity, cuts in numbers.
I mean, I don't think we can appreciate just how big the Met is, do we?
Oh, sure. It's the £400 gorilla in the room in terms of British policing. It's almost as big as the rest of us put together. But they amalgamated. They went for wider spans of control for senior management, I think. And they ended up with smaller teams, smaller numbers of deployable bobbies on the front line. So, yeah, if you're running around chasing your trail, because where there used to be a sergeant and seven, now there's, you know, covering both sides, there's now a sergeant and seven covering the whole lot, for example. You're going to have poor response times. You're going to have poor crime recordings. People are going to cut corners to get home in time. All that bad stuff happens. Despite, I think, people inside the Met saying that the age of Cressida Dick was a golden age and she was a wonderful manager, I think what's falling out now is that, like everybody else, she struggled to keep an effective organisation under the face of austerity and cuts. And it shows. Yes, the Met may say, oh, we have plans, we're disappointed. But you don't get in the engage process without HMIC either saying, no, you haven't really got plans, or we don't think your plans will work.
Or perhaps the engage process is, okay, let's hold your feet to the fire with these plans. Let's give you some oversight and let's steer you in the right direction, because you may have had other plans over the last few years which haven't borne fruit. So let's help you along that journey with those plans and make sure these ones land home. The first thing I want to say in relation to all this is, if you're a cop in the Met and you do what you can for the victims and you work your socks off, I salute you. Especially in relation to the battering that you keep getting in the media by the Home Secretary, by your own mayor. And there's a few bad apples in your force which are affecting you all. And the first thing I want to do before saying anything else is to say, you know, I want to support the everyday officer on the ground who's doing a first-class job or trying to do a first-class job within the confines of what they're given.
There's a myriad of reasons, isn't there, why perhaps the Met have gone into special measures. And what is slightly frightening is that I think you could hold the mirror up to the Met and pretty much say that every other force in the UK is nearer or farther away from being in the same position. I mean, for me, and you might want to agree or disagree and discuss it, but the three main areas for me that have really done for policing in the last 10 years is the big one is the austerity. But it's not the only thing. It's that mission creep into other areas of social responsibility, I suppose, the mental health side of things and the safeguarding. We've become a slave, I think, to the systems that we operate. And certainly when I was in the job, I spent as much time, if not more, updating the system about an incident, which left me less time to actually action anything. It was quite perverse, and it's almost like we've become a slave to those systems. And I think those are the three main reasons. There are other reasons as well.
We certainly shouldered that burden. I had the phrase, the paramilitary social worker of last resort, and I think that's what we've become. But unfortunately, with that comes a responsibility around vulnerability. Now, we'll know the Met are not the only force in the country that are in special measures. Cleveland, Gloucestershire, Greater Manchester, Staffordshire, Wiltshire, all in special measures. And if you look through the causes for concern that HMICFRS have had for them, you will find failing the vulnerable runs like a thread through everything that they've said for all of those constabularies. And the other thing that runs golden thread-like is failures around crime investigation and recording. If you are failing vulnerable people, although we now have this massive responsibility for vulnerable people, not by virtue of criminality, but by virtue of just they are vulnerable within society, because of whatever disadvantage they may have. But we have a responsibility for them, which we don't seem to be able to move back to where it may be more appropriate. So we have that. We also have, if you're not investigating crime properly, I think HMIC will come after you until you are doing.
The problem is, we used to, as a police force, take a report of a crime, decide whether it was a crime or not, do a little bit of investigation, then record it or not. But what we actually did was move to a model of recording it first and then investigating it. And that's what caused a lot of issues. And in amongst all that are officers having to go through the process. You had to update a system knowing that this isn't going to be a crime, knowing that it 100% isn't a crime. And I'll give you an example which happened all the time in the control room. You would get a vulnerable person ringing up who was suffering from dementia, who was saying that the purse had been stolen. And clearly they hadn't, because we had 10, 15 other calls from the same person that, you know, and from family members. And we had like a trigger plan in relation to this person who said that, you know, they were suffering from dementia. But we would have to crime it, because that person was identifying themselves as a victim of crime and saying that they had had the purse stolen. And then it would go out to an officer. The officer would then make the inquiries and then go through the process of decriming it. So there's a lot of internal bureaucracy which was at play for me in the whole national crime recording standards. But to capture everybody and to get the figures right, you had to capture the absurd situations as well.
And there's a lot of repetition in these systems. Certainly I can think of an example where I had some updates to give to, let's just say it's an organisation we work very closely with in prosecuting offenders. I don't want to be any more obvious than that. And there would be updates to the file, additional evidence to add. It wouldn't be as simple as just emailing it or sending it over to the advocate in charge. No, you can't email us. You have to send it through the Connect system. I don't expect people listening to this who aren't police officers will know anything about Connect, but the police officers that do use it, you'll know exactly what I mean. I mean, I worked out one time that it was about 30 seconds per action on a keystroke. So if I'm adding witnesses to a case, it can take all day. And the fact that we couldn't just email stuff over. No, it had to go through the system. And it's just additional delays and wasting time we don't have.
Do you not find, though, in the police, we seem to service everybody else's systems? Everyone else has an internal process and we have to service it. We seem to have to comply with other people's processes.
It's a problem that's been going on for years. And you know, every 6 months, the bosses will say, well, we're having a meeting with them and we'll just bring these issues to the table, but nothing happens. And I feel very strongly about the promotion processes. There's a process in promotion that sometimes has nothing to do with the role that you're going for.
I've been called a sergeant's assessor. The newly promoted sergeants in Lancs and elsewhere now go through a College of Policing syllabus and produce essays and assessed work and critiques over the course of 12 months. And have a portfolio that they have to sign off. Having assessed now three sergeants going through that process, there was nothing for any of them that they had on day one that was added to by what they did by way of this academic work, in my opinion. They were all good, competent sergeants. They learned by doing the job, by working with other experienced sergeants, by seeing what was necessary to get the job done. They found their own way to be a sergeant. But the academic work that they were called upon to do, which was all done in their own time, there's none of that was ever done on police time, though it's meant to be, didn't add much to their competence or capability as sergeants. So why are we doing it?
Do you think that's because we're trying to be everything to everybody?
Because we're trying to be academic.
Yeah, and we're trying to be social workers and child support officers and marriage guidance counsellors. I suppose cops have always been that, haven't they? But We're trying to be all these different things, but if you look again back at the report, it lists crime, vulnerability, victims of crime. And we've said it on previous podcasts, we need to establish what are those 10 things, Mr. and Mrs. Public, that you want us to do. And I tell you what, we'll have laser focus on those areas and we will adapt our structures to fit that and we will train our leaders to service that. That's the issue I have.
I think the HMIC, Andy Cook, I think he probably gets that. You look at what he did when he was in ACPO. He was the lead for serious and organised crime. He was head of crime ops in Lancs as ACC. Been through the Merseyside. He's a thinking man. He's a professor at Liverpool John Moores University, amongst other things. But all his public pronouncements have been around crime and around reducing crime and addressing antisocial behaviour properly.
Yeah, I mean, I suppose what I was trying to say was the promotion process is that, I mean, you've both been supervisors in your time. I've just been a humble foot soldier. But for me, what I want from a boss is a good decision maker. And these promotion processes, these interview processes, are something to be passed. And for me, there was too many people that were good at answering questions, but were terrible decision makers. Once they were in post, were found wanting.
That's absolutely true. As a response sergeant, the number of times you would get the tetra go off on the set to set, so somebody's calling you personally. Just want to run this past you, Sarge. What do you think? And they don't want on the one hand and on the other. They want, right, this is what we're going to do, and do it. They want that on the log. They want the backup. They want a decision-making by a sergeant as to what they're going to do, because they're not entirely sure themselves. Generally, yeah, they don't want you dithering. They don't want you, yeah, I'm not sure. They want a decision, and they want it thought out and structurally sound decision-making. Very important. And if you can't do that for a team, you'll lose their confidence.
And for me, that comes down to experience. The workforce is getting younger and younger. It's not a criticism of them for being young, but there's too many people being promoted too quickly or being overpromoted when they don't have experience on the street themselves. And that opens a whole myriad of issues and problems, which are related to some of the reasons that Met have got into special measures.
I'll tell you the bravest thing I've seen career-wise. Somebody who came to do a spell of temporary sergeanting with my team. And after about 6 weeks, they said, you know what? I'm not actually up to this yet. I need to go back to constable.
Yes.
Made that request. They are now a sergeant.
And probably a good one, I suspect.
Oh, absolutely good. Yes, yes. Very solid. Very competent. They recognised their own limitations in the role and that they were just going to harm themselves and not be the best thing that the team needed, and took that step back. Never seen that happen before. But it's somebody that can look themselves in the mirror, and we need more of that as well.
I do subscribe somewhat, Dave, to what you say about young in service. I wouldn't want to completely exclude people with 3 years, 5 years service. I have found that there have been some quite dynamic, good sergeants who have got less than 5 years service in. So I wouldn't want to completely exclude and put a barrier on a time limit to promotion. But you're right, it's the good cops who become good sergeants.
The mess certainly seems to have suffered from not having that depth of first-line supervision available to them. When you see the corners are being cut that have been exposed by the inspection report, that to me speaks of people being allowed to cut corners or supervision not looking for the corners being cut. And it all comes out in the end.
It's the most important rank in the police service, is sergeant. That's where your culture comes from. Doesn't come from emails from the chief inspector or the inspector. It comes from how that sergeant runs that team. And all the examples you can see in that report, the strip search of the child, all the head in your hands moments that have come out from Met officers can boil down to cultural team issues.
I think you made this point earlier, Dave, but I'm not sure that any of us are very far from that edge of being in special measures for one way or another.
I don't think we are. You know, I entirely agree with you, Steve. I know of some young officers that have got very old heads on their shoulders and absolute admiration for them. The fact remains that there's a lot of them that aren't experienced, and they're sergeants aren't experienced, and not only from a professional point of view. So, you know, we talk about cutting corners. You can cut corners in a job, but you need to be experienced to know which corners to cut, and that experience isn't there. And it's also the pastoral care of their officers, and that then this leads us into standards, doesn't it, and discipline, and obviously some of the WhatsApp groups and some of the really bad moral judgments that have been made. Again, where's the care for these newly promoted sergeants? Are they getting it?
I guess it would depend on what their local management is like. I've had examples as sergeants as being well looked after, well supported, and just the same, some being hung out to dry or not supported at all. If you have a good inspector on your team, that is really, really useful as a sergeant, because you can't self-supervise. You can't supervise yourself properly. You actually need one above you as inspector to say, Richard, that call you made earlier, let's have a talk about that.
Yeah.
If you don't have that, then you're just bimbling along, learning by trial and error. And unfortunately, error is not a good way for other people to allow you to learn your mistakes when you're in the police.
There was an officer, wasn't there, recently on Twitter, who's an ex-firearms officer in the Met, a diplomatic group, stood on the gates of the Downing Street. He's no longer with the Met, I don't know why, but anyway, he applied to become a special constable and failed the online sift. Can you believe that? An officer of all those years. So, and it goes back to the process, doesn't it? Is the process fit for the role that it's designed for? And I don't think it is.
Is it turning out competent, effective first and second line supervisors?
No, it's turning out people that can pass an interview. The other thing but seems to have come out of the report, and again, it could be applicable to any force, is that there doesn't seem to be any professional curiosity in some of their officers. And I'll give you an example. My wife, she had to do some CCTV the other day for a murder inquiry, and the hard drive box was contained in a ceiling. Now, I know for a fact, because it's the situation has arisen previously, that people will come back, tasked with that action, say, oh, it's in the ceiling, I couldn't get to it, so it remains on action. What did she do? She went to the local hardware shop. Can I borrow a set of stepladders, please? Walk back with us along the street with the stepladders. Do you know what I mean? It's just that professional curiosity. It's doing that little bit more than just the bare minimum.
It's bottoming the job, as we used to say. Clear the ground from under your feet. And I've worked, as I say, on the major investigation team. That, and if you came back with that actions part completed, you'd just get sent back out again to do it. But that's where you've got all the resources on murder team. You can throw bobbies at it. You can throw whatever you want at it. It's going to get the finance mostly.
Yeah, it can be about staff and the amount of people that you've got, but it's also a risk-averse culture. Have we developed a risk-averse culture? First thing that some people will say about that scenario you gave there, Dave, was, has she been on a ladder course? You know what I mean? Well, what if she comes off that ladder? Whose liability is it under? Is it the shops? Is it the cops? Oh, he never taught her to do that.
I think she put an entry on the log.
we become risk averse.
Yeah, we do.
Because we have internal processes and we try and stick to internal processes, and sometimes internal processes be damned.
It's the same with normal everyday police business. Burglaries. Okay. Do you go and get enough to put a crime report on the system listing the property? Do you get a proper description of the property? Do you look for a forensic opportunity, comment on it, and get the scenes of crime people down to realise that? Do you do some house-to-house? Do you do a CCTV survey? Do you have the time to download that CCTV and present it if it's evidential? And often for those, we really should do it. We don't do them. We take the crime report, sufficient to satisfy the recording process.
We become a slave to the system again, haven't we?
Yes, but then we have to go on to the next job. And we have to go on to the next job. And it's unusual, I think, for somebody to take a burglary investigation from cradle to grave. When I joined, that wasn't the case. You would do those inquiries. CCTV wasn't as common 30 years ago, obviously, but you would do the house-to-house. You'd look for scenes of crime officers to come in. You'd try and do a proper investigation around it, and now not so much, I feel.
It's great to look at these things in isolation. And yes, you and I, when we first started filling in our little green CID ones, we had the time, didn't we? We had that downtime to be able to go into cash converters or whatever it was and see whether things had been handed in, etc. Those days are gone. You know what I mean? Dixon of Dot Green.
Well, it's not even Dixon of Dot Green. It's whatever role we do.
It's a generational thing, isn't it, from Dixon of Dot Green? Because we always look back 10, 15 years and go, that's the way it was. But if you look at the weight of deployment screens now, the next thing is, well, have you been to that burglary? Right, okay, what's the result? I've got another job for you.
But it goes back to, doesn't it, that those screens are absolutely swelling with vulnerability jobs and not so much crime. You know, I was told when I joined, and it doesn't matter what role, whether you're a firearms officer, a detective, or whatever, you are an investigator first and foremost. And I'm not suggesting that, you know, response officers should deal with a burglary from start to finish. But, you know, if you don't get them key bits of evidence in the first hour, or at least secure them, then you're screwed.
We're not going to burglaries. We're not
well,
putting
that's
boots.
True, yes.
We're not putting boots true. In the living room. And again, I go back to public. What do you want us to do? If you want to do these 10 things, okay, judge us on these 10 things. Don't judge us for a gold service on these 35 things, because we just can't do it. And I really do get the feel from Andy Cook that he wants to move us back to where policing should be.
Yes.
And yeah, hold forces to account, realign them, put them back on the straight and narrow and saying, no, focus on these things. And then we can go and visit people who get burgled or get attacked, because that's what they expect the police to do. And that's what we should be doing.
The other thing that struck me from the Met report was a criticism of how seldom reports of antisocial behaviour found their way to a crime report. As if they were turning up and there's nothing happened now. Well, yeah, you turned up 45 minutes after it was called in. They have dispersed. There's nothing. Whatever the reason, antisocial behaviour reports were not particularly generating crime. And yet, one of the things that blights people's lives is antisocial behaviour. And one of the things people expect the police to deal with is antisocial behaviour.
The thing is, with antisocial behaviour, more often than not, it'll be a grade 3 response, which is...
24 hours, is it?
No, 72.
72.
72 hours. So you can imagine there's a screen full of grade 1s and 2s. Vulnerability that perhaps other areas of social care could have dealt with sooner. And comms operators 6 hours later are ringing people to say, sorry, we didn't get round to you. You can go to bed now because it's 11 o'clock at night. I take it those kids at 5 o'clock this afternoon who are kicking a ball against your wall and shouting obscenities at you have gone now. Yeah, oh, well, job
closed.
Job finished, but it's not job finished, isn't it? Because they're back tomorrow and we get repeat business and we get another grade 3 coming in and it's the repeat caller stuff that we don't have time to nip in the bud. But as a deployment policy, it's a grade 3 all day long and you're never going to grade it above a grade 1 or a grade 2, a call for help.
And I've seen jobs on the other side of things, which we've had to pick up, where no reply or waiting recall, log closed. And we're talking serious crime.
One of the first things I'd do as a sergeant coming in was look at the logs and go through the logs for my area and then go through the deferred logs for my area to see what had been not dealt with previously and then try and get some priority into at least dealing with them.
Now, we've all, in part, I suppose, criticised our former colleagues, but it is important to point out, isn't it, that I think the vast majority of them really are trying their best and they're absolutely battered and goes back to the old problem of there just isn't enough of us. You're right, I think we've lost our focus and vision across the police forces. I really think that. And the leaders in the police and the SMTs, the senior management teams, they've got to have some shoulder some responsibility for that.
I think it's not that we've lost it, we've been given a new one. And I think at some point, HMIC are going to have to untangle or rationalise this tension between dealing with vulnerability in society and dealing with crime and disorder in society. Because the police are there and most of our powers are there to deal with crime and disorder in society. But increasingly, as you know from comms, as we know from the studies that have been done into the amount of demand that we have and the quality of the demand that we have, we're pushed more and more towards the safeguarding and welfare side of work.
And change has become this huge mantra, hasn't it, in the last decade? And you see it yourself, don't you? You get a new boss in or whatever and like, oh, well, let's change. And let's change the things that aren't working, shall we? And let's leave the things that are alone. The problem with constant change is that nothing is allowed to bed in and see where it does work or doesn't. And employees and staff, just their heads are spinning because they just they don't know what's going on.
Oh, it's confusion boats, isn't it? It's like port, starboard. Starboard, port, starboard. Every 2 or 3 years, it's a new strategic direction. It's a new project. It's a new way of doing things that'll be better, and it never is.
I think it's a difficult situation for people who make these decisions about how do we service the responsibilities we have with less staff. And we just rearrange the chess pieces we have, and it's still not enough. And we just try and eke out another 1%. By rearranging into different levels of squads or collapsing this squad and moving them onto response. No, we don't want them on response anymore. Well, perhaps we have another squad. The same idea being regurgitated because we're trying to think of ways to do it with less.
Obviously, you can probably tell how you've got three former police officers that are frustrated as hell at the situation. And I can tell you now that the vast majority of serving police officers will be feeling the same. Well, there we are, special measures. I suppose only good can come from it. It can't really get much worse, can it, when you're in special measures? So fingers crossed that the Met will get the help and the support, which is exactly what special measures is designed to do. Let's just hope that they do get it and it's not interfered with by politics or other agendas.
The Thin Blue Mind with Bradshaw, Horton and Thomas. Policing insights and opinion.
The Acting Inspector with Stephen Bradshaw.
As an actor and police advisor to TV and film, one question I get asked a lot is, who do I think on TV is portrayed well from a police perspective? And as most of the TV police dramas are detective based, and the fact that it's not really been my career trajectory through CID, What I look for is a production which actually shows the human side of the person, the detective. Because there's too many detective programmes, I think, are quite two-dimensional. The very stern, table-thumping, I want your gun and your badge on my desk kind of hard-hitting detective, which I just don't think sits right with current policing. Now, experienced detectives, tell me if I'm right, tell me if I'm wrong, but I was always a fan of the Touch of Frost kind of character, and I think David Jason did a fantastic job, and the writers and obviously the director and the whole crew did a great job in you being able to see the character behind the detective. Yes, he was committed. Yes, he was loved his job. He was good at it. He had a good team around him. But it's how did he treat that team? How did he interplay with those teams? What standards did he expect, etc.? But you also saw him. You also saw his life. You also saw the stresses and the vulnerabilities of him. And for me, it was that character which always stood out to me and made it extremely watchable. The same goes with Martin Clunes from Manhunt, where he played DCI Sutton. Again, you saw quite a unassuming guy, had a good team around him, who was very good at his job, had a good strategic brain, and was able to apply it. And on TV, those subtleties came through, and we didn't have to have the person bashing desks. The subtlety of that character came through, which made it very, very endearing. Now, I never knew DCI Sutton. Those who know him might be able to say it was a good portrayal of him, or it wasn't. But as a character, I know it's a non-fiction character, but as a character, it really did make an impression. The one that I do think actually stands out is, and it might be because I'm a little biased, the fact that I served in Lancashire, and this is based in West Lancashire, but it was the whole team of detectives played in the Bay. Now, that can be down to Derek Carville's writing, but I think there's a lot to be said for the way that Dan Ryan, who plays Tony Manning, Andrew Dalbigin, who plays Clarkey, Erin Shanahan, who plays Karen Hobson, and Tom Law, who plays Eddie. I think it's down to their natural style in being able to portray those officers. Having recently heard Dan Ryan talk about the character, where he said that he'd never played a person of authority before, so he didn't really know how to approach it from an authoritarian standpoint. He just played it himself. He plays characters, an extension of him, if you will. And I think you see a lot of the subtleties again in his character. The storyline focuses a bit on his home life and the turmoils he has in his home life, and shows, again, the wider person. Shows him not just as this senior police officer who's trying to investigate this murder, but it shows the issues he's having with his wife and his children and those dynamics. And he fleshes out the character, and I think that's what makes the character more appealing and makes them watchable. But I'll extend that to the whole cast, the whole police officer cast. Each one of them plays such a good police officer role because of the subtleties. No one's overplaying it and no one's trying to make it more hard-hitting than what it actually is. These are just good people who are good at the job, who are going through the steps needed to solve a murder, a small seaside Lancashire town. So yeah, that's my viewpoint on it. Less is more. I'd be interested in any detectives on their thoughts on who they like on the TV.
The Thin Blue Mind with Bradshaw, Horton and Thomas. Policing insights and opinion.
Well, that's it for this week. Thank you for joining us. This podcast is in partnership with Policing TV, the leading policing media channel. So until the next time, on the next podcast, take care.